One of the ways that the American military prepares for war is through exercises that are termed war games. There have been a series of computer exercises held at new bases in the Persian Gulf. Last summer, experts at the Joint Forces Command in Norfolk, Virginia ran some war games with mixed results. Joining us here in Studio 3A to talk about the role of war games and how they can help determine possible success during conflict is Tom Allen, who wrote the book War Games. Tom, good to see you.
Thanks for being here.
So, what are war games?
Well, there's a long story behind it, I mean, starting with chess.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually you get to a point where they don't want to call them war games in the Pentagon anymore. They want to call them simulations, primarily because there was a movie that came out called War Games, in which a kid gets access to a bunch of computers and almost starts World War III. So they talk about simulation, and the big term right now is something called interactive realism. It's very hard for me to parse that. But I think what they're talking about is that the wargaming that had been traditionally a bunch of guys sitting around a table, and I was in a war game like that back in the late 70s, became something closer to reality, because quite often the commanders, the field commanders or the local commanders, are looking at arrays on monitors that are identical in either combat or in a game.
So this is all computerized, and they're seeing the same screens that they would see in real life.
That's right. And I think one of the developments of this that is very dramatic, but I think it's been overlooked a lot, is the Afghanistan war was being run out of South Florida. That there was no need for the absolute high commander of the war in Afghanistan to be there. Schwarzkopf, of course, had to be there
right.
for that war. But what General Schwarzkopf did use simulations in planning that war. But eventually you break out of simulations and you get into something called exercises. And I think that the recent one this summer was a merger of the kind of idea of an exercise, which uses flesh and blood troops, real cars, real aircraft carriers, real ships, but not real bullets. And at the same time, while you're using these realistic aspects of the exercise, you're looking at computer arrays that will tell you about the terrain, will tell you about the logistics.
Well, are these games designed to test equipment, to test procedures, or to test commanders?
Boy, that's a good question. I think it goes across the spectrum. If you wander around Washington, you don't find any statues for generals who were involved in logistics. It's a very dull subject, getting the bullets and beans to the right places. That is one of the big aspects of a lot of war games. I know there have been games where five people say we're going to have the 102nd Airborne over here and over there. Mm-hmm. People have to keep track of things. And the computers are very good at keeping track of things. So you have that aspect of it. And then you do have commanders learning things. But one of the fallbacks for that, and it gets a little bit into your previous subject area, is if you have a light colonel or a Navy lieutenant commander making believe that he or she is the head of a vast fleet or a vast army, it's kind of heady for one thing, and for another, they all have to worry about their fitness reports. There's a great tradition in wargaming that nobody takes note of what you did. If you make a mistake, that's fine. It doesn't show up in your record. Well, you can imagine what the reality of that really is. So gaming doesn't really do so much training. I think the best thing that it does is it gives people a chance to try out some theories and see if those theories work. But I myself feel that the dangers are inherent in wargaming quite often outweigh the gains.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking with Tom Allen, who's the author of the book War Games. As recently as November, Marine Lieutenant General Paul Van Ripper, who's retired, said American troops will be sent into battle with a set of half-baked tactics that have not been put to the test. And that was after he participated in that set of war games in Norfolk last summer.
Right. Well, that war game was kind of a fallback to something that I had run into when I was writing the book in the 80s, and that is that the Navy had a kind of unwritten rule: you can't sink an aircraft carrier in a war game. And if you talk to any submariner who had been in either an exercise or a war game, you get a whole story about how many times they really sank aircraft carriers. And that in itself then goes back to even to Pearl Harbor. And that when the Japanese were planning Pearl Harbor, they had an enormous war game. And in the war game, 6 carriers were used to attack Pearl Harbor, and 4 of them were sunk. So they said, okay, that's it, we won't do Pearl Harbor. And the umpire said, no, everything's okay, we're going to do Pearl Harbor. And, of course, the umpire was the architect of the plan, Yamamoto.
Yeah, I think you're actually talking about the plans for the Battle of Midway.
No. It happened in Pearl Harbor, too.
Did it? Well,
yeah.
They did it again in Midway. And
yeah,
again, the mythical aircraft carriers were sunk. And they said, no, that can't happen. Let's refloat those and continue the game.
No, it really was in Pearl Harbor. And there were records of this found after the war. There also were some games that went on during the war. But eventually what you were looking at is people learning war while war was going on, which is probably the best way to learn war. As you get into more modern times, when you get into the sort of the high point of wargaming, it was during McNamara's reign as Secretary of Defense.
During the Vietnam War.
During the Vietnam War. And they saw at that point President Kennedy, particularly after the debacle at the Bay of Pigs, said the military does not understand politics. The military doesn't operate inside a big context. So we've got to have geopolitical military games. And they brought in people who were political scientists. And you got into games then where the military was forced to look at the political context of operations. And that's when the big change took place in wargaming.
Mm. Well, let's go to a phone call. Patrick joins us on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, Neil?
Yes.
Okay. I've served on United States First Corps staff in Fort Lewis, Washington, on a number of exercises. And what I found during this time, I was the operations officer for the rear security command post, and my job, more so to speak, was to try to secure the rear area, which was often in a built-up urban environment. And in there, we learned how to try to understand the difficulties of talking from Army to Navy, Navy to Air Force, and more importantly, with coalition partners. And the one main value of the war game exercise is so that different branches of the same country's military learn how to talk together, but also that one country's military learns how to talk to another. And also to identify things like population resource control, things that most military people don't really think about in the war game process, like how to limit collateral damage, danger to civilians. When you're actually being assessed that your actions have caused civilian damage, the red flags go up in your own mind that, my gosh, if this is for real, I may have endangered many civilians. So that's one of the major things that we do with the wargaming. Additionally, we're able to put in a kind of communication test where I can actually see from a core level of a 100,000-person command all the way down to what is a platoon or a company or a battalion doing, and work with the local civilians to try to ensure that our military exercises don't adversely impact on civilian operations.
Tom Allen, that sounds...
Yeah, I think that what you're talking about, looking at from a core area all the way down to a company level, is what the computer simulations enable you to do. But in terms of dealing with civilian and other issues, I think that war games, that's where the weakness really lies.
Well, Patrick, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but thanks very much for the call.
No problem. Thanks, Neil.
And Tom Allen, thanks very much for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome.
Tom Allen is the author of War Games, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.